I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Since Pete Hegseth was nominated to head the Department of Defense, his nomination has raised concerns from extremism experts, just based on the things that he's said publicly, in podcasts, on his Fox News show, on social media, and in his writings. He's published numerous books, including one in which he suggests that factional violence between the left and the right in the U.S. is inevitable.
Pete Hegseth, Trump's Pentagon pick, sparks alarm over far-right extremism. We'll speak with Guardian reporter Alice Herman on this first day of confirmation hearings for Defense Secretary. Then as Gaza ceasefire talks heat up, outgoing President Joe Biden defends his foreign policy.
The Palestinian people deserve peace and the right to determine their own futures. Israel deserves peace and real security. And the hostages and their families deserve to be reunited. And so we're working urgently to close this deal.
We'll speak with Matt Duss in Jerusalem, former foreign policy advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders. His recent column, Democrats have become the party of war. Americans are tired of it. Then global pressure mounts for Israel to release Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, the director of the pediatric Kamal Adwan Hospital.
Some of people who have been recently released just say something about my father, and they told that he has been tortured severely by the Israelis, and he was transferred to another prison.
We'll speak with a pediatrician who collaborated with Dr. Abu Safia to establish a feeding center in Gaza last year. And finally, how you can help the incarcerated firefighters battling LA wildfires. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Qatar's foreign ministry says Israel and Hamas are closer to reaching a ceasefire and hostage deal in Gaza than at any time in the past. For the first time, delegations from Israel and Hamas are in the same building in Doha for negotiations, but they're not holding direct talks. Envoys of both President Biden and President-elect Trump are in Doha as well. On Monday, Biden spoke about the ceasefire talks in the final foreign policy speech of his presidency.
The war between Israel and Hamas, we're on the brink of a proposal that I laid out in detail months ago, finally coming to fruition.
Just last week, Biden notified Congress of a new $8 billion arms sale to Israel. In Israel, two far-right members of Prime Minister Netanyahu's government, National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir and Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, have spoken out against a possible hostage deal, with Ben-Gvir threatening to quit if a deal is reached. Meanwhile, Israel's continuing its assault on Gaza. Earlier today, an Israeli airstrike hit a home east of Khan Yunis, killing at least 9 Palestinians, including women and children. Ala al-Qadi lost his brother in the attack.
As you may know, he was a displaced. We were displaced from Rafah, and he was staying with his in-laws. He was martyred along with his relatives, his brothers-in-law, wife, and his 20 days old newborn baby. Just today, we were scheduled to visit my father. We were saying, thank God, there will be a ceasefire, and we will all go back to Rafah. But my brother was not destined to return.
Meanwhile, Israel has killed another Palestinian journalist in Gaza, Alam al-Nafet, who recently reported from the besieged Indonesian hospital for Dropsite News and other outlets. In a statement, Dropsite News said, quote, through her words and images, she ensured that atrocities which might have been silenced were brought to light, allowing the world to witness the brutal reality unfolding there, unquote. Alam al-Nafet was killed as she was walking to Al-Shifa Hospital. In other news from Gaza, Palestinian fighters killed 5 Israeli soldiers in Beit Hanun in the northern Gaza Strip on Monday. 10 other soldiers were wounded. Nawaf Salam, the president of the International Court of Justice at The Hague, has been named Lebanon's new prime minister. He served on the ICJ since 2017. On Monday, Salam received the backing of majority of lawmakers in Beirut. This comes less than a week after Lebanese lawmakers picked Joseph Aoun to be Lebanon's new president. The Los Angeles region is bracing for another 2 days of high winds that could bring what's been described as, quote, explosive fire growth. The National Weather Service predicts wind gusts up to 65 miles an hour. This comes as fire crews continue to battle the Palisades and Eaton fires and smaller blazes. A new fire in Ventura County burned 55 acres Monday. Over the past week, the fires have killed at least 24 people and left over 12,000 homes and other buildings destroyed or damaged. Meanwhile, a number of residents of Altadena have filed lawsuits against Southern California Edison. The devastating Eaton fire began in an area where witnesses say they saw sparks coming from the company's electrical lines. We'll have more on the fires later in the broadcast, speaking specifically about incarcerated firefighters. The Justice Department has released special counsel Jack Smith's report detailing what he called Donald Trump's, quote, criminal efforts to retain power after losing the 2020 election. In the report, Smith said there was enough evidence to convict Trump, but that proceeding with the prosecution became impossible after Trump was elected 2 months ago. Smith wrote, quote, the department's view that the Constitution prohibits the continued indictment and prosecution of a president is categorical and does not turn on the gravity of the crimes charged, the strength of the government's proof, or the merits of the prosecution, which the office stands fully behind, unquote. Smith went on to write, quote, indeed, but for Mr. Trump's election and imminent return to the presidency, the office assessed that the admissible evidence was sufficient to obtain and sustain a conviction at trial, unquote. The Justice Department has not yet released a second part of Smith's report that covers his investigation into Trump's mishandling of classified documents. The Senate Armed Services Committee is holding its confirmation hearing today for Pete Hegseth, Donald Trump's pick to become defense secretary. The New Yorker magazine has revealed several Republican senators refused to meet with the woman who accused Hegseth of raping her at a Republican women's conference in Monterey, California in 2017. The FBI also did not talk to the woman, as well as other possible sources, including one of Hegseth's former wives or former employees of Concerned Veterans for America. Hegseth was forced out from the group over accusations of financial mismanagement, sexual misconduct, and public drunkenness. The New Yorker's Jane Mayer reports Hegseth's supporters have intimidated potential witnesses from speaking out against the former Fox News host. Mayer also reveals a group of conservative billionaires, including Bill Koch and Richard Uihlein, plan to spend $1 million to pressure Republican senators to support Hegseth. Confirmation hearings for Interior Secretary nominee Doug Burgum and Veterans Affairs Secretary nominee Doug Collins were scheduled for today, but have been postponed over paperwork, it said. The New York Times is reporting Donald Trump is expected to give Elon Musk, the world's richest man, office space in the White House complex to run the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. Musk, who has billions of dollars in government contracts, was the largest financial backer of Trump's campaign, has been regularly seen by his side at Mar-a-Lago since the election. Meanwhile, tensions growing between Musk and former Trump advisor Steve Bannon. In a recent interview with an Italian newspaper, Bannon vowed to, quote, get Elon Musk kicked out, unquote, of Trump's inner circle. Bannon said, quote, he is a truly evil guy, a very bad guy, unquote. Bannon has criticized Musk's support of the H-1B visa program used by many tech companies to hire foreign-born workers. A federal judge has ordered the white supremacist group Patriot Front and its leader to pay some $2.8 million in damages for violating the civil rights of a black musician who was attacked by Patriot Front members in Boston's Back Bay in 2022. The attackers approached Charles Murrell as he was headed to perform at a July 4th event. P pinned him to a lamppost and kicked and punched him. They were also heard using a racist slur against Morrell. In the UK, two members of the Direct Action Climate Group Just Stop Oil were arrested after they spray-painted the words, 1.5 is dead, on the grave of Charles Darwin at London's Westminster Abbey Monday. The protest follows the news last week that 2024 was the hottest year in human history, with the average global temperature rising by 1.6 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. This is one of the activists.
2024 was the hottest year on record. We have already passed through the 1.5 degree that was supposed to keep us safe. Millions are being displaced. California is on fire, and three quarters of all wildlife has disappeared since the 1970s.
The activist later said she believed Charles Darwin would approve of their protest, quote, because he would be following the science and he would be as upset as us with the government for ignoring the science, unquote. President Biden announced federal student debt cancellation for another 150,000 borrowers Monday. The relief targets students who are defrauded by their institutions, people with permanent disabilities, and public service workers. The latest move brings the Biden administration's total student debt relief to some $183 billion for over 5 million borrowers. Student debt activists have been urging Biden to use all legal tools at his disposal to cancel more loans before Trump takes office, including for the most vulnerable debtors, such as older people. The far-right-dominated Supreme Court in 2023 blocked Biden's plan that would have cut up to $20,000 in debt for over 40 million people each. And the youngest of the Freedom Riders, Charles Person, has died at 82. Person was one of 13 original Freedom Riders that risked their lives, frequently coming under violent attack as they traveled across the South at the height of the civil rights era to fight against segregated interstate bus services. Charles Person was just 18, a freshman at Morehouse College, when he joined the Freedom Riders movement, boarding a New Orleans-bound Trailways bus in Washington May 4, 1961. Though the original journey was cut short after the Freedom Riders were repeatedly brutalized, including by Klansmen, it inspired hundreds of others to join the bus desegregation movement, ramping up political pressure on the Kennedy administration. Interstate buses and terminals were desegregated later that year in November. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The confirmation hearing for President-elect Donald Trump's pick for Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth begins today amidst backlash over his history of sexual assault, misusing funds in his previous positions, possible ties to white nationalists, and various violations committed while under the influence of alcohol. The hearing is expected to be contentious, but Democrats do not have the votes in the Senate to kill the nomination. Two other confirmation hearings set for today were delayed due to missing background paperwork. Trump's pick for Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins and Interior nominee Governor Doug Burgum. Pete Hegseth is a former Fox News host and military veteran. Democrats say the FBI's background check failed to fully interview key witnesses, including Hegseth's ex-wife. The New York Times reports she, quote, made multiple attempts to contact the Bureau for a more substantive discussion, but her calls were not returned, unquote. The New Yorker's Jane Mayer reports Hegseth supporters have sought to intimidate potential witnesses from speaking out against him. Mayer also revealed a group of conservative billionaires, including Bill Koch and Richard Uihlein, plan to spend $1 million to pressure Republican senators to support Hegseth. Jane Mayer previously reported Hegseth was forced out of leadership roles at two veterans groups for misusing funds, sexually harassing women, and being repeatedly drunk on the job. In one incident, Hegseth drunkenly chanted, kill all Muslims, at a bar in 2015. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports Hegseth's own mother once accused him of mistreating women. Hegseth has been a vocal opponent of the Pentagon's embrace of multiculturalism and the Pentagon's decision to allow women to serve in combat. He laid out his views on the Sean Ryan show in November.
You don't like women in combat?
No.
Why not?
I love women service members who contribute amazingly, because everything about men and women serving together makes the situation more complicated, and complication in combat means casualties are worse. And when you actually go into the hood, again, and I, you know, I got response. I've got 99% positive response to this. A few, a little bit of pushback. But when you actually break down what they did in the studies to open the door for women in combat, I mean, they just ignored them.
Meanwhile, CBS News reports Hegseth was one of 12 National Guard members removed as guards for President Biden's 2021 inauguration over possible white nationalist extremist ties. Hegseth has tattoos associated with the white supremacist and neo-Nazi movements, including what's known as a Jerusalem cross, a symbol used by Christian nationalists. For more, we're joined by Alice Herman, politics and democracy reporter for The Guardian. Her piece is headlined, "Pete Hegseth, Trump's Pentagon Pick, Sparks Alarm Over Far-Right Extremism." Welcome to Democracy Now!, Alice. Why don't you start off by just laying out what you know about Pete Hegseth on this first day of his confirmation hearing?
Thank you so much for having me. Shortly after Trump picked Pete Hegseth for his nominee to head the Defense Department, I was hearing from expert sources on far-right extremism that there were things about Hegseth in his kind of public appearances, from the tattoos that he has inked on his body to statements that he's made in podcasts and on Fox News, to the multiple books that he's published, that kind of raised alarm bells about possible ties to extremist groups, or at least a kind of affiliation or ideological alignment with the far right. And so my reporting on Hegseth has focused mostly on those sort of public statements that he's made and the ways that he, you know, presents himself on social media, from the content that he's putting out there to the things that he's saying, like I said, on podcasts and on the show that he used to host on Fox News. What we know is that he really gives the impression of kind of a hyper-masculine MAGA crusader, and he uses the term crusades himself, seemingly from a fascination with the crusades. We know that he has a tattoo sleeve that features at least two tattoos that experts in white nationalism and the far right identified pretty quickly as being symbols that people on the far right, including neo-Nazi groups, have used themselves. You know, we can get more into some of the things that he's written in his books, but there's a lot out there. And I think kind of the point that I want to make here is that, in addition to the really great investigative work that has been done, you know, looking into accusations of sexual assault by Pete Hegseth to, you know, like you described, allegations of drunkenness at the workplace. He also has this very public kind of persona that will likely be, you know, interrogated during his Senate confirmation hearings today.
I wanted to go back to Pete Hegseth in his own words, speaking on the Sean Ryan show about why he was deemed to be an extremist by the military.
I was deemed extremist because of a tattoo by my National Guard unit in Washington, D.C. And my orders were revoked to guard the Biden inauguration. When I was writing the book, I reached out to somebody in the unit who could confirm with 99.9% certainty, because he was in the meetings and on the emails. Nope, someone inside the D.C. Guard trolled your social media, found a tattoo, used it as an excuse to call you a white nationalist, an extremist. And you were specifically by name orders revoked to guard the inauguration because you were considered a potential threat.
How is that? It's a cross.
It's a Christian symbol.
Your response, Alice Herman.
Sure. So the two tattoos that, you know, that researchers and experts and historians kind of pointed to as like a red flag for extremism were the Jerusalem cross tattoo that he has on his chest and the words Deus Vult that he has tattooed on his bicep. Deus Vult means God wills it in Latin, and both are rooted in the Crusades, and both are widely popular among, neither are widely popular among Christians today, but they're both associated with far right and neo-Nazi groups, which have used the symbols. And so, of course, Hegseth can claim some plausible deniability, like not every single person who takes an interest in the Crusades or an interest in one of these symbols is necessarily affiliated with a far right group. But given the fact that he has both, the scholars and historians that I spoke with felt that that seemed to indicate at the very least an alliance or an ideological kind of alignment with white nationalist and Christian nationalist subcultures.
I wanted to go to the part of the article where you write much of Hegseth's social media content is promotional. He regularly advertises an ammunition company, a coffee company, and the pro-gun group Right to Bear on Instagram. In November 2023, he promoted an Advent songbook published by the Forge Press, which is described on his website as an organization that arms Christians with weapons to build, defend, and expand the new Christendom. Talk more about this.
Sure. So, yeah, if you look through his and from what I can tell, he hasn't he and his team, whoever's, you know, kind of helping him prepare for this confirmation hearing, hasn't changed his social media presence, at least from what I can tell. And so if you look through like his Instagram account, you can see that he spends a lot of time advertising for a pro-gun coffee company. He advertises for a company that sells silencers for guns. He advertises, like you mentioned, for he advertises for a company called The Forge Press, which is a Christian nationalist company that has a podcast, and they also sell merch, you know, things like hats that say Make America Christian Again and things like that. And so, you know, you can always kind of get a sense of the ideological leanings of a content creator based on who they're platforming and who they're promoting.
And his position on women in the military, I mean, he's going to be before people like Senator Tammy Duckworth, whose legs were blown off in Iraq. You have Elizabeth Warren, who's just written a multi-page, 33-page report, case against Hegseth on this issue, women in the military, on his campaign against so-called woke generals to throw them out of office, you know, clean house.
Yeah, that's right. So in his 2024 book, which is called War on Warriors, he says that the military, well, first, he kind of opens his book with an anecdote that you described earlier about the military allegedly not, the army not calling on him to serve during Biden's inauguration amid concerns about the tattoos that we had discussed. And then he goes on to, you know, write about how he doesn't think that the military should be focused on or even engaging in rooting out extremism within the ranks. And he locates diversity, equity, and inclusion principles in the military as a problem. He sees efforts to promote women and people of color and LGBT people in the military as extremely problematic. And he suggests that the promotion of minorities within the ranks is the result of preferential treatment and not merit. He writes pretty disparagingly about women and LGBT people and people of color in the military in that book. It's kind of one, it's one of his central claims.
You speak with a number of historians who say purging generals constitutes a coup.
Yeah, he in that same book, he proposes purging woke, in his words, woke generals from the military as a solution to this problem that he identifies or that he claims the military has with embracing, like I said, DEI principles. And it's true that the historians that I spoke with described that as being tantamount to a coup.
Finally, what does the military gain by having him at the helm? As one senator pointed out, he hasn't been in charge of any group larger than 40 people, his platoon. We're talking about 3 million people in the military.
I think that the Trump administration would stand to gain a loyalist. And even in the transition zone communications, they've emphasized his total alignment with Trump's vision and loyalty to Trump. So I think that is what the military stands to gain if he is confirmed.
Alice Herman, we want to thank you for being with us, politics and democracy reporter for The Guardian. We'll link to your piece, Pete Hegseth, Trump's Pentagon pick sparks alarm over far-right extremism. We'll revisit this hearing tomorrow after the first day of confirmation hearings today. Next up is Gaza ceasefire talks continue. We'll look at President Joe Biden's defense of his foreign policy in his major State Department address yesterday. We'll go to Jerusalem to speak with Matt Duss, former foreign policy advisor for Senator Bernie Sanders. Stay with us. Sankofa Visions by Charles M. Murrell III. On Monday, a federal judge ordered the white supremacist group Patriot Front and its leader to pay the musician some $2.8 million for attacking him in Boston in 2022. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As Gaza ceasefire talks continue, and less than a week before President Donald Trump takes office, outgoing President Joe Biden defended his foreign policy in a major address at the State Department yesterday, where he was met by protesters with signs that read, Biden's policy is genocide. In his speech on Monday, Biden said his administration spearheaded a ceasefire plan that the UN Security Council approved in June, even as he continued to provide Israel with weapons and claimed to be, quote, on the brink of a proposal I laid out months ago, he said.
We're pressing hard to close this. The deal we have structured would free the hostages, halt the fighting, provide security in Israel, and allow us to significantly surge humanitarian assistance to the Palestinians who've suffered terribly in this war that Hamas started. They've been through hell. So many innocent people have been killed. So many communities have been destroyed. The Palestinian people deserve peace and the right to determine their own futures. Israel deserves peace and real security. And the hostages and their families deserve to be reunited. And so we're working urgently to close this deal.
Biden also touted his administration's role gaining NATO support for Ukraine after Russia's 2022 invasion and defended the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan in 2021 after two decades of occupation. For more, we go to Jerusalem. We're joined by Matt Duss, Executive Vice President, Center for International Policy, former foreign policy advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders. His new piece for The Guardian, Democrats have become the party of war. Americans are tired of it. Matt, welcome back to Democracy Now! Respond to President Biden's address.
Well, I think looking at as a whole. I mean, I think there are things that President Biden can claim credit for in his foreign policy. The break from the neoliberal economic order, a new approach to economics that invests in jobs and American manufacturing, that has important domestic and foreign policy implications. I think his work defending Brazilian democracy is something that's not mentioned enough. He very